Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dear viewers, in the previous sessions, we have taken a critical look at the collection of the Quran narrative which has been recorded in Bukhari, and which shows and which says that there was an official collection of the Quran which was made after the death of the Prophet in the times of the Caliph Abu Bakr. And the Prophet did not leave behind an official codex or an officially collected Quran. However, it was the Caliph Abu Bakr who, at the advice of Umar radiallahu anhu, went about collecting the Quran. And he had advised Zayd ibn Thabit to do so. And finally, Zayd ibn Thabit collected the Quran through various sources and compiled it in the form of a mushaf. We had critically evaluated this account, which is recorded in the Al-Jami' al-Sahih of Imam Bukhari. In this session, viewers, I would like to summarize the arguments or the critique that we have already seen in detail in the previous sessions. I'd like to just concisely state these arguments or this critique so that we are able to gauge in a nutshell what exactly is the criticism which this narrative entails. Remember that we are talking about this narrative as has been recorded in the Al-Jami' al-Sahih of Imam Bukhari, and we have observed that it is also recorded in other collections. This particular critique also is based on the details of the narrative recorded by Imam Bukhari, but obviously it's not just confined to Imam Bukhari's version of the narrative. It applies to all other versions as well. Now, the first criticism which this narrative calls is that we find that the nature of the event is such that it should have been reported by a large number of individuals. We know that the narrative says that it was the Battle of Yamama, which took place in the times of the Caliph Abu Bakr, in which a result, we find a lot of Huffaz, or the memorizers of the Quran, who had been martyred. And seeing this situation and this scenario, Umar radiallahu anhu was alarmed, and he came to Abu Bakr and he said that if these things go on like this, then we will have a large part of the Quran lost. So therefore he advised him that we should have the written collection of the Quran. And the way it was reported, we find that if such an event had taken place, it should have been recorded variously by various companions, because obviously this whole task could not have taken place in isolation. It would have taken place in the presence of people who would have gone about in accomplishing this task. Now, on the other hand, we find that this narrative is reported in a very weak manner. And when I say weak, I refer to the technical term of gharib, which means that there is only one narrator in the first tier who reports it. And not only this, we find that the first three steps of the first three tiers have only one narrator. So we have Zayd ibn Thabit reporting this narrative. Then we have Ubayd ibn Sabbak reporting this narrative from Zayd. And then we have Ibn Shahab Zuri reporting from Zayd ibn Sab, from Ubayd ibn Sabbak. So not only is this narrative reported as a gharib narrative, and of course when you say a gharib narrative, it means a narrative in which in any step of the chain of narration there is just one narrator. So it's not just in one step, as I said. In the first three steps, we find that there are single individuals who are reporting this narrative. And this obviously is something very, very strange and calls for a question that how is it that a task which was obviously which took place, which should have taken place, the way it has been reported, and the nature of the event is such, the nature of this collection is such that it should have been reported in the first year by many people, not just by Zayd ibn Thabit. But we find that this is not the case. And as I said, after him as well, in the next two steps too, we find just single individuals reporting it. Now this is compounded by the fact, this whole scenario is compounded by the fact that some of the other history books, other hadith books, some very primary hadith books do not report this narrative at all. Thus, for example, the Al-Jami' al-Sahih of Imam Muslim and the Muwatta of Imam Malik, both are absolutely devoid of this narrative. As far as Imam Muslim's Al-Jami' al-Sahih is concerned, we find sections and chapters which devote themselves to things which relate to the Quran, and one would find Imam Muslim to have reported this narrative at that particular section, in that particular section in which he reports other reports regarding the Quran, but we do not find them. And we also need to note the fact that Imam Muslim reports narratives which have Imam Zuhri, which is the focal point of this narrative. And also, we also find that Imam Muslim's conditions for accepting a report are slightly less stringent than that of Imam Bukhari. So it's strange that why did not Imam Muslim record this narrative at all? And as far as the Muwatta of Imam Malik is concerned, there too we find a section which relates to the Quran, but this narrative is not found there. And as if another thing which can be added to this is, of course, we are discussing the first point, the first critique, and that is the weak nature of the reporting. The nature that we would consider to be all-embracive is not there. So we found that the narrative was reported by in the first three tiers by just a couple of single individuals. Then to compound this fact, we found that perhaps maybe because of this reason, Imam Muslim did not even record this narrative in his Al-Jami' al-Sahih, and neither did Imam Malik in his Al-Muwatta. Now, continuing with this fact, we also find that this narrative does not exist in some of the earliest books of history. And amongst these earliest books of history, the most important is the Tabaqat al-Kubra of Muhammad ibn Sa'd. And this is something which is very, very strange, because the Tabaqat is arranged in a manner in which we find the biographies of people, of the earliest people being mentioned there. We have the biography of all the people who figure in this narrative recorded there. Thus, we have Abu Bakr's biography, we have Umar's biography, we have, when I say biography, I refer to biographical notes, short notes on these individuals. So, and we have also biographies of Hafsa. And then we have the biography of Zayd ibn Thabit. So all the four main people which are mentioned in this narrative, we have short, at times short and at times lengthy biographical notes on these personnel. And there's no place in these biographical notes do we find that any of these four individuals had any role in the collection of the Quran. And this makes things even more grave when you find that details which are very insignificant at times, which seem very insignificant or trivial, they are mentioned in their biographical notes. So the question arises that why do not their biographical notes mention that Abu Bakr or Umar, Ritala anhum, or Hafsa, to whom this Mus'haf was transferred after the death of Umar, as the narrative says. And again, the central character is Zayd ibn Thabit. In all these biographical notes, we do not find any mention of the fact that these people had any role of collecting the Quran. Again, I had also referred to the fact that earlier histories, which not only Tabqat ibn Sa'd, but a history such as Ibn Qutaybah al-Mu'arif, also who is one of the earliest historians, although he's just after Ibn Sa'd, but again, his al-Mu'arif also mentions biographical notes of these four personnel. And again, this time also we find that there's no mention of these people's roles in the collection of the Quran. And similar is the case with the Tariq of At-Tabri. So Tabri's Tariq is a monumental, it's a voluminous work on the history of Islam. And lo and behold, here again, we do not find any mention of the collection of the Quran that is a narrative of Bukhari reports that it had taken place in the times of the Caliph Abu Bakr. So all in all, in this first point, this first critique, we can clearly see that the nature of the transmission of this report is extremely frail, and this is compounded by the fact that two of the important books of hadith, the Imam Muslim's Al-Jami al-Sahih and the Muwatta of Imam Malik, are devoid of this report. And also we find that very early Muslim histories like the Tabqat of Ibn Sa'd, and then the Tariq of Tabari, and Ibn Qutaybah al-Mu'arif, and there are a couple of other books as well which belong to the same era in which this narrative has also not been mentioned, or any sort of mention regarding a collection of the Quran being taken place in the time of Abu Bakr has not been mentioned. So this whole scenario casts serious doubt regarding the historicity of this narrative, and it is it makes it very suspect that this narrative would have taken place. We have to note the fact, viewers, that this narrative tells us that it was as a result of the Battle of Yamama, in which a lot of memorizers of the Quran had been martyred, that this event had later called, or at least alarmed, Umar ta'ala anhu to come over to Abu Bakr and give this advice. So obviously this thing is the way it has been reported in this in history and in hadith books is very, very weak and very, very frail. It's a very, very feeble transmission. Now, next, we go on to the next critique or the next point of criticism, the second point. And in this particular point, we have discussed in our earlier sessions that the collected Quran seems to be a personal endeavor, whereas the narrative itself gives us this impression that it was an official collection. Obviously, Abu Bakr, in the capacity of a caliph, had went about doing it, and Umar had come to him when he saw a number of martyrs being a number of people being martyred in the Battle of Yamama. So the whole and his summoning of Zayd ibn Thabit and asking him to do so, this whole scenario gives us the impression that it was an official collection. And when it was an official collection, then of course it should have that status, that it should have belonged to the state and it should have been treated as a state collection. But there are at least two good reasons which tell us that this was not the case. The first is, we know that the narrative mentions the fact that the collected Quran after the times of Abu Bakr was passed on to Umar, and then after his death it was passed on to his daughter Hafsa radhiyallahu anha. So why was a official Quran, of officially collected Quran, passed on to Umar's daughter Hafsa? It should have passed on to the next caliph. And if the argument is that the next caliph, or the selection of the next caliph, had been delegated to a committee of six members who were supposed to elect one among them, the argument could have been made, the point could have been made, that this collected Quran should have been consigned to those six people, and whoever was whoever finally made the caliph, then it should have gone to him. But on the other hand, we find it ending up in the custody of Umar's daughter Hafsa, who obviously had no role in the state affairs. Not only that, we find that in the times of Caliph Usman, when he had actually asked Hafsa radhiyallahu anha to hand Umar in the copy, so that he, the collected Quran, so that he could make copies of that collected Quran, we find that Umar actually returning after making copy, Usman returning that that Mus'haf back to Hafsa, which again would be something questionable, that if it had belonged to the state in the first place, it should have not come to Hafsa. And if had it at least landed with Usman when he had asked for it to make copies of it, then why did he return it back to Hafsa? After all, it was an official collection. He should have kept it. And we also find in some narratives that Hafsa had shown some hesitation in handing over the Mus'haf to Usman, and he had to give him assurance that he'll hand it back, that she gave it to him. So all in all, this shows that it could not have been an official collection. It was more of a personal endeavor. Not only this, the second point in this particular critique is that we also find that this whole endeavor seems to be something which was never put to use. The collected Quran, what happened to the collected Quran? It was consigned to oblivion, it seems, because we find that people were not offered this Quran for that. For example, they could have come forward and written their own copies from this Quran. They were not stopped in writing their own Qurans or memorizing the way they were originally doing. This collected Quran seems to have played no role. We find that in the Caliph Umar's role, reign especially, which spanned 10 years, he had made extensive efforts to disseminate the Quran. He had hired people on stipends who were the memorizers, who were people who would teach the Quran. And we never find them using this collected Quran. So it seems that it fell in disuse. And such was the nature of this disuse that in the times of the Caliph Usman, when he called for the copy and he had this checked, he found that there was one verse, or Zayd ibn Thabit obviously on his behalf found that there was a single verse which was not found in that collected Quran, which shows that particular Mus'haf had not been put to use, it had not been read, otherwise this mistake would have come to the fore. It was totally kept in oblivion in the 2 years of Abu Bakr's caliphate, and in the 10 year or 8 year period, 8 or 10 year period of Caliph Umar, again it was not used. Because it was only in the times of the Caliph Usman when it was once again read by Zayd ibn Thabit that he found it, that a verse was missing. And as I said, people seemed to have no role in having any access to the collected Quran. Neither did the two caliphs made any effort to put this Quran in use, nor did people come forward, nor were people stopped in the rest of the empire to not go about their own Qurans, but to at least have some connection with this collected official Quran. So this never was the case. So this casts serious doubt on the fact that what exactly was the role of this Quran when in the first two caliphs' reigns it was never used. So this is the second critique which we can present on this whole collection episode as recorded by our hadith books. Coming to the third point of criticism, relates to the fact that we find that there are certain contradictions which result if we accept this narrative. If you recall, we had discussed that this narrative has various versions, it has variants. So these variants tell us that when Zayd ibn Thabit had gone about collecting the Quran, he used various sources like parchment, like bones, like the memories of men, all sorts of things. And he collected all of the Quran. He said that he collected every bit of the Quran. And he also stresses the fact, as is mentioned in these narratives, that the last two verses of Surah Tawbah were found with only a single individual. And the variants name different people for the single individual. Some of the variants say it was Abu Khuzaymah. Some others say it was Khuzaymah. Some say it was Haris ibn Khuzaymah. Some say it was Hars ibn Khuzaymah. Some others don't even mention, I just say Rajulun min al-Ansar, as people, one person among the Ansar. And in some narratives we find that the person who is reporting, he says that he's not even sure whether it was Khuzaymah or Abu Khuzaymah. So even if we disregard some of the minor people, or some of the people who are mentioned in a minor way, we can clearly see that most narratives say that it was either Abu Khuzaymah or Khuzaymah. So let us see what the contradictions are when either of these two people is supposed to be the person with whom the last two verses of Surah Tawbah were found. For example, let's see if the person with whom these last two verses of Surah Tawbah were found was Abu Khuzaymah. Now, the first question which arises is that if he was the person with whom the last two verses were found, then where was Khuzaymah ibn Sa'd anhu? Because it is with him that he had actually come forward in the times of the Caliph Usman and said that, look here, there is a verse of Surah Ahzab which is missing. And then he presented that verse of Surah Ahzab at that time. So if Zayd ibn Thabit was collecting the Quran and he said that only one verse was found with Abu Khuzaymah, then Khuzaymah ibn Thabit, why didn't he come forward and say that he too had another verse? Because that verse supposedly was never reported in this Quran, never recorded. It was recorded two decades later in the times of the Caliph Usman. So why didn't he come forward? Or why wasn't he called? So this is a question that arises if the narrative is Abu Khuzaymah. Another thing that arises in this fact is that if he was Abu Khuzaymah, then we find that Zayd stressing the fact that he had found all verses of the Quran with people except one, except two verses of Surah Tawbah with just one person. Now, if he was correct in this regard, then it should automatically have meant that there was no other verse which had gone missing. But we find, as I said earlier on, that the missing verse of Surah Ahzab were found in the times of Caliph Usman. So why is it that if Zayd's claim was true, it could have been either true or false. If it would have been false, it's another matter, but it was true. This should have mean that he was absolutely sure that there was just two verses were missing, which was found by a single individual. But it seems that this collected Quran was not even checked, if Abu Khuzaymah was the person, because obviously if it is not checked, then it was only because of this lack of checking that we can say that the absence of another verse was diagnosed many years later. And finally, again, if we think that Abu Khuzaimah is the person with whom these last verses of Surah Toba were found, then another question arises is that we know that in the times of the Caliph Usman, when Zayd ibn Thabit was again involved in having the Quran copied out, he had insisted that the narrators mention that he had that the last verse, one of the verses of Surah Ahzab that were found in him, were accepted by Zayd because Khuzaimah ibn Thabit carried the weight of two witnesses. Now, in the case of Abu Khuzaimah, if we come back to the times of Abu Bakr, as we were discussing, if he was the person with whom these missing verses were found, then why did Zayd ibn Thabit not insist that two witnesses should be there? Because in the times of the Caliph Usman, he accepted Khuzaimah's verse of Surah Azab, which he presented, because Khuzaimah had the weight of two witnesses. But this was never the case with Abu Khuzaimah. So we find this inconsistent attitude by Zayd ibn Thabit. In the case of Usman, it was accepted by a person who had double the weight of a witness. So therefore, another person was not called. However, in the case of Abu Bakr's times, if it was just Abu Khuzaimah, then why is it that not another person was called? Because it is generally said, it was reported, as we shall see, and we have already seen in the detailed discussion, that two witnesses were required for the collection. So this again is a contradictory attitude that we find being displayed by Zayd ibn Thabit. And if someone says that Zayd himself was the second witness, then again this cannot be accepted, because in the case of Khuzaimah ibn Thabit, when he insisted in the times of the Caliph Usman that there had to be two witnesses, he could himself have presented the second witness when obviously he was not there. Okay, this is how we have analyzed the first assumption, that the narrative, the last verses of Surah Tawbah were found with Abu Khuzaimah. Now let's imagine the other scenario. And the other scenario is that these last verses were found with Khuzaimah ibn Thabit. Now, if this is the case, then the question then the whole issue becomes even more grave and even more strange and eerie. Because if Khuzaimah was the person with whom these last verses of Surah Tawbah were found, then it is just very obvious that he should have also said, because he had been identified, it was from him that these last two verses of Surah Tawbah were found. He could have just said, look here, I have another verse which Zayd you have not collected, and that is the missing verse of Surah Ahzab, which we know that it was only in the times of the Caliph Usman that he had come forward. Khuzaimah ibn Thabit had come forward and said, okay, I have another verse which was not recorded, and that was the verse of Surah Ahzab. So it is extremely strange, viewers, extremely strange that a person who says with whom the last two verses of Surah Tawbah were found, they were recorded, and that was the end of that. But suddenly we find out that in 20 years later, the same person had come forward and said, look here, I have another verse which is not recorded. Obviously, we would have expected him to present that verse which was missing at the time of the Caliph Usman, the Surah Ahzab verse, right at the time of Abu Bakr, when he was the person with whom the Surah Tawbah verse was found. So he could have said, okay, I have another verse as well. Please record it. This never happened. And viewers, we also need to underscore the fact that there are some other minor contradictions as well. These contradictions which I have just pointed out result if we assume either Abu Khuzaimah or Khuzaimah to be the person with whom these missing verses were found. But then we have other narratives, as you would recall when I was giving a detailed critique, that we find, in general terms, we find that the missing verses of Surah Tawbah, I would say, when I say general terms, that most of the narratives refer to the fact that the missing verses of Surah Tawbah were found at the time of the collection of Caliph Abu Bakr, رضي الله عنه. However, most narratives speak that the missing verse which was found in the times of the Caliph Usman's collection was Surah Ahzab. This is what the general consensus seems to be. But I have pointed out narratives in my earlier discourse and my earlier critiques and my earlier sessions that there are some narratives which mention the reverse, absolutely the reverse. Thus, these narratives mention that the missing verse of Surah Ahzab was found in the time of the Caliph Abu Bakr, and the missing verse and the missing verses of the time of Surah Tawbah were found in the time of the Caliph Usman. And similarly, we have some other variations in this regard as well. So this is the third point of criticism in which we can clearly see that there are some contradictions if we assume who the person was with whom the last verses were found. And obviously, then these verses themselves also are questionable, whether they, which of them were found in the time of Abu Bakr and which of them were found with Caliph Usman's collection. So this is the third point of critique, or the third point of criticism. Let me move on to the fourth point of criticism. And the fourth point of the criticism is that the methodology which was adopted by Abu Bakr seems not only to be questionable, it also seems to be insufficient. It was questionable and insufficient. It was questionable because the task itself seems to be a very monumental task. It seems to be a task in which several people should have been involved, should have played their role, because obviously the whole of the Quran was collected. And we find just a single individual like Zayd ibn Thabit, although he might have been competent. But the nature of the task, or the huge nature of the task, required that more people should have been, should have played their role in this, and especially people who were more involved in the times of the Prophet, who were the scribes perhaps, who had written the Quran and who were senior companions, but they were not involved. Not only this, we also find that Abu Bakr never consulted the Shura or the general people regarding what he was advised by Umar. It was just as if Umar came to him, Rizal Anhu, and asked a certain task to be done, and then he went about doing it. We find Abu Bakr in so many affairs in his own times that he would consult the Shura. He would consult people for all major decisions. But here, such a major decision as the collection of the Quran was never even put before the Shura or the members with whom he made consultation. So here's the second part of this critique is that, which I always pointed out before, that this methodology adopted by Abu Bakr was insufficient as well. In other words, this means that it was not sufficient. It would not have met the purpose for which it was accomplished. And that is that the collected Quran was devoid of diacritics and vowel sounds, which means that it could not have distinguished between similar words like ra and za, and it could not have been properly pronounced in the absence of vowel sounds by people who were not huffaz or memorizers. Because people who were converts, maybe people who did not have the whole of the Quran in their memory, they could not have read the Quran or made any benefit or extracted any benefit from it because of the fact that that Quran just had a skeletal text. So what use was this collection when people could not have read it? People who were not memorizers, and we know that the complete memorizers of the Quran, although we had partial memorizers, we had complete memorizers, but of course people who were converts or people who did not memorize the Quran. So what was the use of this collected Quran when the exact sound of the Quran could not have been preserved? Because that skeletal text, as I said, was without diacritics. It was without vowel sounds. So only the huffaz, either the huffaz would have been sufficient, if more huffaz had been produced, if there was a danger that the Quran was being lost, or at least some diacritics or even vowel sounds, if they had been put on that skeletal text, that could have ensured. So that if these two methods had been adopted, we can say it was a sufficient methodology. But neither any huffaz were engaged, neither was it said that we need more huffaz, let's produce more huffaz, nor was this skeletal text, the skeletal text had any diacritic marks or vowel sounds so that it could be preserved the way it had been pronounced or it had been read out. So we see that this is an insufficient methodology which was adopted by the Caliph Abu Bakr. So now let's move on to the fifth point of criticism. And as far as this fifth point of criticism is concerned, recall the fact, viewers, that we had made a critical assessment of the fact that just as there is this standard version of the collection of the Quran, which Abu Bakr undertook. Remember, we had some secondary narratives, some other narratives as well, which besides the standard version, if at all there is a standard version, they mentioned a different version of the first collection. So remember, we had seen that there are at least four other versions which are different from the standard version. So one of these four versions was the one in which, again, although it was Abu Bakr himself who was supported to be the first collector or responsible for the first collection, but the manner in which that report is laid out, or the events or the details or the content of this alternate collection although it is Abu Bakr himself, but these reports are not only contradictory with the report, which say the standard report, but also amongst themselves. So if we take all of these reports to be at par, if there is no standard version, and these are other versions as well, and if we take them at par, and why do I say that we take them at par? I say that because all of them have been critically analyzed, and even if the isnad of a particular report could have been slightly better, but I have shown in my critique that since all of them have been weakly reported, so therefore if we place the standard version and if we place the other versions at par, we'll find them in absolute contradiction with one another. They'll just cancel out each other, and we just cannot have any definite inference as to what happened. So I was saying that there is this alleged standard version which says that Abu Bakr was the first collector. Then we have another group of narratives in which, although Abu Bakr is the first collector, but they have tremendous amount of discrepancies. There are a number of reports which mention him to be the first collector, but these reports have a different story of the first collection, different from each other and different from the standard one. Then we have reports which say that it was Umar رضي الله عنه who was the first collector in his times. He was the person. These are reports which again contradict themselves. They have a number of flaws themselves. They also have weak chains of narration, as is the case with the previous ones. And they also contradict the standard one, and they also contradict one another. Then remember I pointed out that there was another report which says that the first collector was Usman رضي الله عنه. Again, that collected report was stood on flimsy grounds, as I had pointed out. Then there is another fourth first collector, and he is Salim Mawla Abi Huzaifa. Salim Mawla Abi Huzaifa. His report is also reported in a very weak manner. So all in all, we find various reports of the first collection. All of them contradict one another. All of them present different details. And if they all are kept at par, as they should be, because all of them have been weakly reported, then nothing can be made out as to what actually happened. And in the presence of this whole mass of contradictory reports, we just cannot say that events happened the way they have been reported in these individual narratives. Now, let's move on to the sixth point of criticism. And that sixth point is that we also observed that there was a secondary batch of narratives in which it was said that the Quran was collected with the help of two witnesses, that its text was finalized with the help of two witnesses. We had analyzed in that all these reports, again, were contradictory. All of these reports were contradictory to one another, that the fact that whether two witnesses were involved in the fact that they already knew which the verses were. Some said no, two witnesses were picked out on verses which were not known to Abu Bakr, to Zayd ibn Thabit. And then we again have the fact that these two witnesses, we never know what these two witnesses were. Historians or muhaddisun report their own interpretation as to what these two witnesses were. Some say that these two witnesses were, one was of kitaba, written corroboration, and one was an oral corroboration. Others say that there were two people who testified that the verses they have brought forward were the ones that they had heard from the Prophet, or the Prophet had written in the Arz-e Akhira. In short, we have different people saying what these two witnesses meant. So, and these two witnesses, if the Quran is accepted that it was finalized with the help of these two witnesses, then the manner in which these reports have been narrated in history, as I had pointed out, it is such a frail and weak manner, in such a contradictory manner, that nothing can be made out of them. And lastly, if I would say, if it is accepted that two witnesses were actually involved, then, as has been pointed out earlier, then this would be in dire contradiction to the fact that the claim of the Quran that it is mutawatir, which means that a number of people in the first year had reported the Quran, as is the case, as I'll presently or in my future discussions point to later on. But if this is the case, that only two witnesses were used to finalize the text of the Prophet, then it would be in dire contradiction with the fact that the Quran is mutawatir. So now we move on to some of the other points of contradiction. And the seventh point in this regard is that we had also seen that the as far as the isnad of this narrative is concerned, we had seen that in all probability that this narrative is munqata, it is broken, it has a broken chain of narration. And this is because Ubayd ibn Sabbah, who reports from Zayd ibn Sabit, we in all probability find that this report is broken from here. Because Imam Bukhari himself, who says this narrative, who records this narrative, also has his own history, which is called a Tarikh al-Kabir, in which he records biographical information about narrators. And in that particular book, he does not regard Zayd ibn Sabit to be a teacher of Ubayd ibn Sabbah, neither in the biography of Zayd ibn Sabit nor in that of Ubayd ibn Sabbah. Both of them are devoid of the fact, they do not mention whether one of them was a student and the other one of them was a teacher. So why is it that Imam Bukhari is reporting in one of his books, which is Al-Jami' al-Sahih, that Zayd was the teacher of Ubayd and Ubayd was a student of Zayd in this particular report? But when he comes to his own book, Al-Tarikh al-Kabir, in which he mentions the biographical accounts of Zayd and of Ubayd ibn Sabbah, but he does not give this mention that the two are students and one of them is a student and the other one is a teacher. So this is something very grave. And this is compounded by the fact that some of the other books, like Al-Jarh wa Ta'dil of Ibn Abi Hatim, that too, and At-Tabqat al-Kubra of Ibn Sa'd, they too are devoid of the fact that they mention that these two were student and teachers. So in short, we find that none of the earlier books mention Zayd to be the informant of Ubayd ibn Sabbah. And this is corroborated by the earlier books. So therefore, in all probability, this narrative is broken from here. Also, we have the fact that Zayd ibn Sabit had 40 students or 40-odd students, which have been reported in history, and we find him reporting this narrative, or just one person from among those 40 students who reports this narrative from Zayd ibn Sabit. It's extremely strange, and this is further compounded by the fact that in the time of Medina, there were many students which were present with him. So why is it just Ubayd ibn Sabbah, out of those 40 students, reporting them? And again, in this regard, it needs to be understood that Ubayd ibn Sabbah himself is a person who is not very well known. So remember, I had pointed out that Qarabisi, one of the earliest hadith critics, had said that Muhaddisun have put a question mark on the personality of who Ubayd ibn Sabbah is. And this is recorded by, these words of Qarabisi have been recorded by Al-Karabi in his Kabul al-Akhbar, that Qarabisi has said that Muhaddisun have pointed out that who is this Ubayd ibn Sabbah? So he seems to be a very unknown person as well to the earliest Muhaddisun. So all in all, we find that not only there is a high probability of the fact that this narrative is broken or munkata between Ubayd ibn Sabbah and Zayd ibn Sabit, it also shows us that Ubayd ibn Sabbah himself is not a very well-known person amongst the earliest authorities. And finally, viewers, we come to the eighth critique in this regard, and that is that the central person of this report is Ibn Shahab al-Zuhri. And Ibn Shahab al-Zuhri, about whom we generally regard our muhaddisun or our scholars to have a very high regard, they give a very high regard to Ibn Shahab Zuhri, and he's even regarded to be Amir al-Mu'mineen fil Hadith. He's the greatest champion of Hadith. However, I presented some alternative evidence on the basis of some of our previous scholars, previous authorities, who had pointed out that Ibn Shahab Zuhri's personality is afflicted. It is enigmatic. It is afflicted with a number of flaws. So he is guilty of tadlis. He is guilty of idraj. He is also probably guilty of irsal, and in general. And one can never say if this irsal, this tendency of irsal, this tendency of idraj, and this tendency of tadlis did not have any influence in this narrative as well. And also, we find that he is reporting the same fact in a different manner, in a different way, to two different people. When he would be very fresh, he would report it differently and in a different way. And people would wonder that he is reporting the same fact to different people in a different way. So all in all, this casts serious doubt on the personality of Ibn Shahab Zuhri, because he was a person, he is a central person, he is the focal point of this narrative. We find him to be the central person who reports this narrative the way it is reported in various forms in our hadith books. Not only that, we find that there are eight of his students who report this narrative. So we have Ibrahim ibn Sa'd, we have Shu'ayb ibn Abi Hamza, we have Abdurrahman ibn Khalid ibn Musafir, and we have Yunus ibn Yazid. And then extending them further by four people, we have Ma'mur ibn Rashid, we have Sufyan ibn Uyayna, we have Ubaidullah ibn Abi Ziyad, and finally we have Ibrahim ibn Ismail. So we have these eight people reporting this narrative from Ibn Shahab Zuhri. And remember, viewers, that I pointed out that none of these eight chains is reliable. None of these eight chains. So we can see there are serious problems with the isnad. It in all probability is broken. The fact that Ubayd ibn Sabbak is not a very well-known person. The fact that Ibn Shahab Zuhri's personality is afflicted with a number of flaws. The fact that the eight students of Ibn Shahab Zuhri, the chains of narration of all these eight students, the way they report this narrative from Ibn Shahab Zuhri, all of them have serious flaws. So we can see that the isnad of this narrative is an amalgam of problems. It has huge problems. We have noted already the Daraya part, in which we have found how this narrative is weakly reported. The contents are unreliable. Now, in this second part, I have shown you that this narrative, the isnad of this narrative, is also extremely weak, extremely unreliable, and we see clearly that we cannot depend upon this isnad. So, viewers, if this is the case, if this is the situation, that not only the matn of this narrative has a number of questions, not only the isnad of this narrative has a number of questions, then what can be done? What can be surmised? So my take on this is that on the basis of this narrative, the collection of the Quran, the way it is reported here by Imam Bukhari and by other people, we cannot make any conclusion. We cannot accept this narrative the way it is. We simply cannot derive any historical reliable data, and we need to reject this narrative in totality. When I say in totality, I say the way it reports things. However, viewers, when we reject this narrative, we cannot deny that something did happen in the time of Abu Bakr, because the way things have been reported in history, the way even a number of narratives which report this thing, there was some element, there was some part of truth. There should be some part of truth there, which was perhaps reported in this distorted form and which took the shape of a number of distortions. There has to be some semblance of information which we might regard as something which had happened. So if I would analyze this fact, I would come to the conclusion, keeping in view all the data and keeping in view that there is a set of narratives which I'm just going to put before you, in which we find that there was something which Abu Bakr did for the cause of the Quran, then we can easily come to the conclusion, or I can easily make this conclusion, that perhaps what Abu Bakr did in his own times was to have the Quran personally collected with him in the form of a written codex. That's all what happened. The rest of the details do not form any sort of cogency or any form of reliability. As far as the collected Quran is concerned, all that we can make out of the fact is that perhaps it was a personal collection which was made by Abu Bakr, in which he involved maybe Zayd ibn Thabit, maybe he would have involved other people. But as it was nothing of the sort of an official connection. It was nothing of the sort of a problem which was arisen in those times. I have already pointed it out in my earlier sessions that although the narratives say that it was the Battle of Yamama, because of which Umar became alarmed that a number of memorizers have been lost, I have analyzed yours earlier on and seen and shown you that this particular fact, whether a number of memorizers were actually martyred or not, is itself questionable. We cannot say there were a large number, neither can we say with certainty there were a few number. I had surmised earlier on that this is insufficient. There is insufficient data in history which can tell us whether the number of memorizers was huge or not. We had not taken that particular point of critique into consideration. But again, as I said, if everything is put on the desk, if everything is analyzed, then the part that can be accepted in all of this data is that perhaps Abu Bakr just went about making a personal collection of the Quran, and the whole grand scheme of things in which the Quran was being transmitted by a number of individuals, it was being done as it was being done. as far as this narrative is concerned, it was no case of alarm, no case of collection of the Quran by Zayd ibn Thabit as if he was doing something official on the part of the Caliph Abu Bakr. All that we can see is that Abu Bakr perhaps was the first person who could have collected the Quran in written form for his own personal reading or for his own personal use, and he could have been the first person. And when I say this, when I conclude this and I infer this, this is because of a number of narratives, which I'm now just going to read out, a couple of narratives they are, and very short. And the important thing is, and the thing worthy of note here is, that none of these narratives is reported by Ibn Shahab Zuhri. We do not have Ibn Shahab Zuhri being mentioned in any of these narratives. Thus, for example, we find Muhammad ibn Sa'd in his At-Tabaqat al-Kubra. He reports this narrative, and the person who reports, he records this narrative, and the person who reports is Ali رضي الله عنه. And it is said, أن عبد خير علي قال يرحم الله أبا بكر هو أول من جمع اللوحين. So may God have mercy upon Abu Bakr, Ali رضي الله عنه says, because he was the person who was the first person to collect the Quran between two covers. So this is how Ali has says this narrative. Then again, we have Abu Ubaid's Fazail al-Quran. We have this narrative mentioned there, and here it is reported by Abd al-Khair. So Abd al-Khair says that أَوَّلُ مَنْ جَمَلْ الْقُرْآنَ بَيْنْ لَوْحَيْنْ Abu Bakr. The first person to collect the Quran between two covers is Abu Bakr. Then we have the Musannaf of Ibn Abi Shayba, and we find Sa'asa ibn Suhan saying that أَوَّلُ مَنْ جَمَلْ الْقُرْآنَ وَوَرَّسَ الْكَلَالَ Abu Bakr. The first person to collect the Quran and give inheritance to Kalala was Abu Bakr. Then we have Amr ibn Shurahbil al-Shabi. Again, this narrative is found in the Muqaddamatan fi Lum al-Quran. And the words are that Abu Bakr أَوَّلُ مَنْ جَمَلْ الْمُصْحَفِ, that he was the person who was responsible for collecting the Mus'haf between two covers. So all in all, viewers, what best can be surmised from whatever has been mentioned regarding the event which had actually taken place, or the happening which we can say with reasonable certainty to have happened in the times of the Caliph Abu Bakr, was that perhaps he was the person who was, for his own personal reading, for his own personal purposes, had collected the Quran between two covers. That's all which can at best be gathered. Even this could be debatable, but this is what at best can be gathered. So this is what we have discussed in totality regarding the collection of the Quran in the times of the Caliph Abu Bakr. In the next sessions, inshallah, we'll continue with this journey and see how this collection of the Quran narrative, as has been recorded in the times of the Caliph Abu Bakr, of the Caliph Usman, we'll inshallah continue our journey and then analyze those reports. أقول قولي هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم ولسائر المسلمين والمسلمات